WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
When former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee won the Iowa caucus and gave his victory speech, very visible right behind him was martial arts star Chuck Norris. This happened days before the late-night talk shows returned from the writer's strike. But when they did, all of them noted the prominent presence of the former star of Walker, Texas Ranger. Conan O'Brien went so far as to claim the status of Kingmaker. By playing clips of Norris for years, so often he had a special Walker, Texas Ranger lever installed, O'Brien insists he gave Chuck Norris new life. Norris then endorsed Huckabee and gave him new life. Ergo, Conan O'Brien says, he's responsible for the success of Huckabee. Regardless, we thought we'd hear from Chuck Norris himself, in an interview Terry Gross conducted 20 years ago, 5 years before he starred in his own TV series. But to set the stage, let's hear a clip of Chuck Norris from his signature TV show, the scene that introduced his character of Walker, Texas Ranger.
Beer. You boys are under arrest.
Stuff it, buddy.
You got no jurisdiction south of the border. You can't do squat.
Watch me.
I don't think you're getting the meaning of this, buddy. And right now, I see four of us and one of you.
That's about right.
When Terry spoke to Chuck Norris in 1988, she asked him how he became a star in martial arts movies and about his career plans at the time.
When Bruce Lee died, the karate market or the kung fu market in movies died with him. All producers thought, well, since Bruce died, there was no one else that could fulfill that bill. And so when I finally broke in 77, I was known as the kung fu star, you know, in Hollywood or in the media. But I knew that if I was stuck strictly as a kung fu star, that my career would be very limited and I'd never, you know, wouldn't be able to grow. So I started working more into the action orientation of my films with, you know, martial arts or karate integrated into the action. And that way I wouldn't be limited to being strictly a kung fu star, and that's what's worked for me.
What were some of the things that you had to learn in order to broaden into more general action films?
Learning how to act was the main thing. I jumped into the films with absolutely no experience as an actor, had a very little acting classes and so forth, so I had to kind of learn on the job, and it wasn't easy to do that.
Wasn't there a certain amount of acting you have to do to be successful in karate?
No, not acting like you do on the screen, because it's a total different thing. You have to have that drive and determination like an actor does, and you have to, you're performing, but it's on a physical level. but in films, when you're doing scenes over and over again, see, remember when you're fighting, it's spontaneous. But when you do a film, everything is prearranged. You have marks you have to hit. You have to, have to do the scenes over and over again. And so it's much more difficult that way.
Well, Steve McQueen, who was a friend of yours and whose son studied at your karate school, gave you some advice on acting. He told you not to verbalize what's already on the screen. Mm-hmm. It almost seems like that became a code for you. I mean, you're really known in your movies as not saying a lot.
Most of your action actors, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, I think they, all of us kind of stick to that mode. Is that when there's something to say, say it. If it isn't important, then keep your mouth shut, you know. And whether that's right or wrong is up to debate. But, you know, the thing is that we're not Dustin Hoffman, who's got that ability to express in words. Because he can express in words and you can visualize them. But not many actors have that ability to verbally express himself, and you can in your mind see what he's saying. So the thing is, if you can show it on the screen visually rather than verbally, it's much better.
Let's talk about stunts some more. Now, do you always do your own stunts?
Not all of them. Some I don't do. If it's way out of my range of ability, then, of course, I won't do it. I don't do fire burns, which is really extremely dangerous.
That's what, like you're walking through an exploded bomb or something
right,
like that?
Right, or catching on fire.
Uh-huh.
and things like that, I wouldn't want to do. There's just certain things, or high dives. And I'm not a high diver, so I have to have a stunt double do that. But anything that requires balance or coordination or a certain amount of strength, then I can do that.
Well, I remember in Code of Silence, there's a great scene in which you're fighting with someone on top of a New York City train.
Right. Yeah, I did
and
that.
And the train is moving. That's you. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a stuntman.
No, I did that.
Now the train was actually moving while you were doing that, wasn't it?
It was doing about 35 miles an hour. In fact, you know, the thing is, the stuntman that I was fighting with was a little bit apprehensive about me doing that because we were relying on each other to keep our balance on that train because we're 50 feet in the air. That's an L train. We're 50 feet in the air. And he said, I don't know if you should do this or not. I said, well, look, let's do it with the train stopped. If you feel I'm not capable of doing it, then we'll bring in a stunt double. So we did it with the train stopped. And he said, no, he says, you'll do okay. So I did the fight with him.
How did you and the stuntman that you were working with keep your balance while the train was moving? What were some of the tricks to doing that?
Well, the tricks is just having the ability to maintain your balance up there. It's, you know, we had the fight prearranged, of course, but we're rolling all over the top of that train. And we're really controlling each other. You know, we're preventing each other from falling off. So we're really balancing each other as we're fighting on top of that train. And it just, you know, either you have the athletic ability to do it or you don't have it.
Now, as you're actually holding on to each other and trying to help each other keep balance, you have to look as if you're fighting each other and trying to throw each other off the top of the train.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about how you kind of make it seem like you're trying to throw the person off the train while you're really hanging on to them?
Well, it's kind of a hard thing to describe, you know, because you're up there and you're just doing the thing as strong as you can without losing your balance. And a couple times, you know, I broke my balance once, but he controlled it for me. And then he broke his balance once, and I brought him back on balance. And it's just a matter of being able to have the experience and the ability to be able to do that.
Did you have signals to one another to alert one another if you felt like you were losing your balance or in serious danger?
No, because we could feel it. Mm-hmm. You can always tell when you get a hold of each other whether he's balanced or not, so we can always feel it in our body language.
Okay. Let's look at fight scenes for a second. When you're choreographing a fight scene where you'll be using martial arts, are there certain things that you think have to get into the scene, like a certain number of kicks or a certain amount of really dazzling stuff?
No, the main thing, when I do a fight scene, I try to make it as real as possible. You know, the thing is that if I'm fighting two guys is one thing, if I'm fighting four, like in Code of Silence, I fought about 12 or 14 and I got the daylight speed out of me. You know, I didn't win because it would have been totally unrealistic for me to whip that whole bar room. And so in turn, you know, I wound up losing that fight. But that's the realism of it. If I'd have whipped everybody in that bar room, it would have been totally unrealistic. And no matter how good you are as a martial artist, you only have so much ability. And so in turn, I wound up losing that particular fight, but I tried to make it as exciting and as dramatic as I could before I got whipped.
In your autobiography, you talk about having to break the pain barrier in karate, and you've had a lot of broken bones during your years as a karate teacher and as a karate student. You have broken hands, broken noses. So what do you mean when you say breaking the pain barrier?
Well, you're able to eliminate and really ignore the pain. It's something you practice and train, and you get to a point where you're able to really ignore the pain.
Is this something you've had to practice as a stuntman too? You know, in your role as doing your own stunts?
Oh, yeah. That still doesn't mean I like pain, because I don't like pain. I'd prefer not to be hurt than being hurt. But the thing is, like in Firewalker I broke my ankle in the second week in the filming, so I had to go 8 weeks with a broken ankle. And I couldn't put a cast on because I was still filming, so I had to keep it taped through the whole movie. So it was painful, but you learn to work with it.
How do you feel about actors who have a real tough guy image but don't do their own stunts?
Well, that's fine. You know, I see nothing wrong with that. It's probably the best thing to do is not do your own stunts because, first of all, you're taking pay away from a stuntman who, that's how he makes his living, is doing stunts. And it's probably the best thing to do, and I probably shouldn't do it either, but it's right now it's kind of a thing I enjoy. I'm kind of a frustrated stuntman, I think.
Well, you kind of have to do it at this point, don't you, even if you didn't want to?
No, I don't think so. If I didn't want to, I wouldn't have to, no.
Chuck Norris is my guest. I recently saw your new movie, Missing in Action Part 3, Braddock.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's interesting. You're without a shirt during a good deal of the movie. And I wonder if that's intentional, to show off all the muscles.
No, not really, because I'm not an Arnold Schwarzenegger. But, in the torture scene that you saw, it was conducive to not have the shirt on. But
conducive to what?
Well, because I'm being electrocuted and all the stuff here. They have to be able to see the reaction of my body being electrocuted.
Can I tell you my reaction to that scene?
Sure.
Well, just to describe it, you're being tortured by South Vietnamese, right?
North Vietnamese. He's from the Saigon, yeah.
Okay. And they've kidnapped your son. So you're being tortured in this cell. You're suspended by your hands. Your hands are tied over your head. And you're standing on your toes. Now, your son is in bondage in a chair in front of you, and there's a gun pointed at him. And the torturer tells you that if you step down, you're on your toes, but
right.
if your heels touch the ground and your arms lower about an inch, that this gun is going to go off.
This shotgun, yes.
Yeah, and shoot your son.
Mm-hmm.
Now, seeing you kind of writhing up there with all your muscles exposed, it struck me as almost a sexual bondage scene.
Well, is that good or bad? I don't know.
I'm not trying to put any value on it. It just struck me, and I was wondering if that was conscious or not.
No, not with me. It wasn't conscious. No, I didn't see it as that.
But
maybe the women might. I don't know.
Or some men might. I don't know.
I don't know really, because I don't see myself as that way. So, but it's interesting you thought that way. But the thing is, what we were trying to, show the mental torture as well, because, here he is trying to force my feet down so the shotgun will go off and kill my son. So it was the tension in the mental torture that was going on as much as the physical torture, because it doesn't, work out that way.
You're the woman who plays your long-lost wife,
yes,
in the movie, I hope I'm not giving too much away,
no,
is killed
no.
off pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I think you're frequently in movies where you don't have a romantic interest
ladies?
In it. Yeah.
Yeah, my leading ladies don't last too long in my films, do they?
Well, why is that? Are you, do you think it's part of your image to not get romantically involved?
No, not really. I think the key thing is creating an emotion that builds the whoever plays the bad role to build up him being, super bad, giving me a reason to retaliate for the atrocities that have been inflicted in whoever it is that is in the movie with me. Most of the time, it's a woman.
In your movies, your character is constantly being provoked to use his martial arts skills,
mm-hmm,
and to pull out guns and knives as well. Do people ever try to take you out in real life? Have you
No.
been called on in real life to use those skills?
I've never had to use it. I've been all over the world and traveled everywhere, and I've never had anyone approach me in that respect. When you see trouble happening, you try to diffuse it before it becomes uncontrollable. And I've had to do that several times, where I've been able to diffuse a potential physical altercation before it got to that extreme. And that's part of, and the thing is, if you don't get emotionally involved and you analyze the situation of why it's happening, generally you can get out of it. And when, especially when the person realizes you're not doing it because you're afraid, but you're doing it just because you don't want the trouble. And they can feel that. They can generally get a sense of that. And when they do, then if you give them an out, then generally they will take it.
What effect do you think you've had on the American view of maleness?
God, I don't know. I don't know if I've had any effect on that respect. Because, again, I don't even think of me having a maleness type of an effect on the audience. I just play a particular type of character that I enjoy being. It was a character that I demonstrated as a karate instructor for 15 years, and I've tried to carry it on into my screen life. And a guy who's has a certain compassion for life and people, and doesn't want violence. But then he's put into a position that there's no choice but to deal with it. And we all would have to do that in our life if we're forced into it.
Well, Chuck Norris, I want to thank you very much for talking with us. Thanks for being with us.
You bet.
Chuck Norris, speaking to Terry Gross in 1988. He's still on the campaign trail with Mike Huckabee, and Conan O'Brien has started showing clips of Walker, Texas Ranger again.